I worked very hard for everything I had, so I wanted to make sure that whatever deals I was putting my money, at least I don't lose it. Maybe I'm not going to get the same return at dollar deals, but long term, I'm going to get to where I need to get to. And that's what all the individuals that are really seeking financial freedom should do.
Do you love your job, but want other investment options than your company's 401k and trying to pick stocks? If so, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, you will get actionable information for your passive real estate investment journey. Welcome back to another episode of Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. Here's your host, Justin Dixon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. I am your host, Justin Dixon. And today on the podcast, we've got Ben Soifer. He moved here 36 years ago when he was born in the Ukraine. We talk about his real estate journey that he's been in for over 30 years now. Started out as a single family broker in California, where he lives currently. And then after about 10 years in kind of the residential real estate space, he started investing in commercial real estate, focusing heavily on triple net leases. And we dive into what a triple net lease is, why it's beneficial for the owner or an investor. And then we talk about some of the educational things that he's got going on with his company, Money Management Investment Fund. So this is a great episode learning from Ben. So let's get Ben on the pod. All right, Ben, man, thank you for being on the podcast. Happy to have you on.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
Awesome. Well, I guess let's jump right in, give kind of the listeners a little bit about what you do and where you are, and then we'll start to unpack some stuff.
Well, physically, I'm in Calabasas, California. I'm an investor that's looking to invest across the United States, in most of the states. I've been in real estate investments for about 30 years now, specifically started out with residential, and for the last 20 years been focusing on commercial, industrial, retail, mostly triple net properties. If anybody wants to get a hold of me, you can go to moneymanagement.today. You can look me up on any of my social links and we can definitely connect. My full name is Ben Soifer. I am originally from Ukraine. I was raised a little bit in Israel for about 14 years. Spent the majority of my childhood there and been in this country now for 36 years.
Very cool.
Yeah. Specifically awesome. In LA.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. I mean, LA is not a bad place to be from a climate perspective and all that fun stuff. So I guess let's jump into kind of the real estate side and then we can kind of dig into money management and all of that. But I guess coming from the Ukraine and Israel, how did you kind of get into real estate? I'm always interested in like people's like origin stories.
So to me, to be able to achieve financial freedom was out of a need. I grew up not in the conditions that I'm living at now, not in the conditions that I've raised my family and three kids, thank God. And that was out of a drive to really make it and to be able to have whatever it is that you would like to, because we all have different goals, whatever it is that I need, which I had to figure out, obviously, in my young adulthood. And luckily for me, I was able to. And luckily for me, I stumbled upon real estate and finance just because I'm a stable type of a guy that doesn't mind to do the hard work long term. And that's what real estate is. It's slow, but it happens. You just got to be in it. And for me, I didn't really like the ups and downs of the stock market and potentially other types of investments. Of course, we all kind of get into the stock market and bond investing through our different retirement accounts. But real estate, and specifically through self-directed IRAs, you're able to really manage your own wealth. And that's kind of what allowed me to see the vehicle that I can help others with achieve financial freedom.
And so your first foray into real estate was in single family. So did you start investing and did you have a W-2 job and you started investing, or did you kind of jump into like brokerage, or how did that all start?
So I jumped in cold turkey on my last semester at undergraduate school in real estate and finance. I got my real estate license in April of 1996. And by that June, summertime, I pretty much had $7,000 saved. I've been living on my own for about 4 or 5 years. So I knew how to live on a budget.
Yep.
And I knew I had 90 days to sell a house. And it's either make it or break it. And lucky for me, in the third month, I was able to make two sales. Of course, I didn't get the commission checks for those for about 45 to 60 days. But it allowed me the ability to see that I can be consistent as long as I keep working hard. And I liked the space that I was in. So I was doing it 7 days a week, 12 hours a day for the first 2 years. A lot of hard work.
And then, so I guess it sounds like you put in the effort to kind of start your real estate journey in kind of the active way, right? You're a real estate agent. At what point did you start to shift your focus and mindset into putting your money to work for you and investing? And how did that start?
It's funny because I actually purchased my first home before I received my real estate license. On my first home at the age of 21, I got my license at 23. And the way I got the deal is through a landlord of mine that told me, hey, I have a rental with tenants in it. Would you like to purchase the house? Mm. And at that point, I was a waiter and a manager in training at a Domino's, waiter at Olive Garden, going to college. And this is 1994. So we just had the earthquake. So prices here were pretty low, but he rehabbed the property and he was ready to flip it. So I was able to procure a borrower that would qualify for a loan, created a joint venture with that borrower, and syndicated my first deal at the age of 21. So I knew that real estate is really the long term. And I knew that in order for me to really know what the big guys are doing, the big companies, the asset management companies that are able to get the opportunistic deals,
yeah,
I need to be able to sell to investors properties in order to be able to know what the game plan is. And that's what I did. I was focusing mostly on investors that were looking for real estate as opposed to organic families that need to move to an area or move out of an area. Of course, I was doing that business also,
but yeah,
my focus was more investor driven.
So you mentioned a couple things there, like you did a joint venture and then you did a syndication. Like, how did you at 21 get the knowledge or exposure to those types of vehicles, where I think if I was 21, I couldn't even spell those words at that point and had no real estate mindset. So I'm just kind of curious, I'm always curious how do people figure stuff out, right? And obviously you were resourceful and was like, how do I buy this? And I can't afford it. It's like, how do I do it? Kind of a thing.
I moved out at the age of 16, out of a need, out of not a good situation. I had to, prior to marrying my wife at the age of 25, I had to rehabilitate myself to become a proper adult for my future family. And that's kind of how real estate was to me. It was always something that I knew, as long as I work at it, I'll be able to be good at it. Once I examined the other trades, construction, when I started my college career, I wanted to be like a good Jewish boy, a doctor. And then when I understood that I'm not into biology and chemistry, I switched to poli-sci. Then when I knew I have to go to law school to be an attorney, 3 more years, I go, okay, that's not for me. I'm living on my own. Whatever minimum is in order to actually make good money plan. That was my plan. So I kept going to school, educating myself in the focus that I saw myself gravitating towards. I really wanted it. I was very hungry for it. And that's most of the people that I worked with throughout my career, for them to be able to achieve similar success, they got to really want it. And once they want it, it becomes a little bit easier.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people, and I would lump myself into this, especially early on, is like, if you hit that roadblock of like, well, I don't know how to do it, I'm just going to quit and go find something easier to do. You had a different philosophy around just getting shit done and being able to find a way to figure it out and do it. So I think that's super fascinating and a really strong mindset to kind of start your journey, because obviously real estate is a lot of things. It takes a lot of grit and hard work to kind of get the flywheel moving. And then it just takes a little bit of effort to kind of keep the ball moving as far as that goes. So I want to kind of jump into or shift into kind of some of your commercial stuff. Obviously, it sounds like you started your career early on in residential. But before we jump into the commercial side, I want to take a quick sponsor break. So we will be right back.
Whether you're in a job you love or hate, building a financial foundation is important. This foundation can support you by providing passive income, stability in an uncertain economy, or the launching pad for you to start your own business. Great Venture Capital helps busy professionals invest in commercial real estate to build passive income streams, grow wealth, and take advantage of tax benefits. If you'd like to learn more, check us out at greatventurecapital.com or send an email to justin@greatventurecapital.com.
We are back on the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. We've got Ben Soifer on the pod. And so Ben, you started talking about your journey in kind of the residential real estate side. That's kind of how you kind of started your real estate journey. And you did that, I think you said, for the first like 10 years in your real estate experience. And then about after that 10 years, you shifted into more of a commercial real estate focus, looking at different asset classes. So I'm always curious, how did you change your mindset to going away from just investing and working in residential real estate to then going kind of upstream, so to speak, and going into the commercial side?
So, yeah, I actually created a little portfolio of properties that were key acquisitions that I made in my first 10 years of investing. And that's available also on our webpage, moneymanagement.today, under Soifer Investments. That's specifically my investments, like I said, in the first 10 years. So a lot of them were exchanges. In order to save money with the IRS, you're behooved to go and find another property that's a rental property, and that way you don't have to pay Uncle Sam. So
yeah.
I started out with SFR, single family residences, because that's what I was selling my clients anyways. So obviously I'm able to find a deal because I'm in the business.
Yeah.
And as long as I saved up my commissions, then I should be able to buy a home. And that's really what I was doing. My first year in the business, I bought two properties. My second year in the business, I bought two more properties. Then it was 1998. Everything's been going up since 94. I got a little bit scared. Then a little bit the 2000 correction that happened through the internet bubble.
Yeah.
That obviously put a little bit breaks into it, but I continued to buy throughout. Where in 2004, I actually did my first commercial deals. I had a property in Woodland Hills here, which I was able to exchange into a shopping center in Houston. And at that time, LoopNet, CoStar was just starting out. This is 2004. You were able to actually find good deals on those platforms. Right now, it's a little bit more difficult, which is a whole other story. But I realized my bread and butter was obviously selling to the people around me that I've been selling for the last decade real estate. But my investment focus was completely on commercial properties that are triple net leases. So that way the investor is able to really not withstand when tax fees go up or when there's other expenses to the property. That's why triple net leases are really the best for the investor. And understanding that the exit strategy, that if we want to work for 10 years, for 15 years, when are we going to be able to get that passive income that's really going to give us what we need in order to live? And all we need in order to get that income is make sure that it's secured by good collateral, where it's growing and it's counter fighting inflation. And that's real estate. That's real estate. So at the end of the day, how can you manage it better? How can you be part of the better deals where hopefully your partners are doing the best and not charging you too much? That's the goal.
Yeah.
It's like any investor would want. So because I was in it and because I saw all of the opportunities and I had other investors that I was working with that showed me what they were doing, that allowed me to really compound my growth. When you said earlier, how is it that you even knew how to get into it or all of that? I surrounded myself with people that were doing it and they were willing to share.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you mentioned a couple of things that I want to dig into, but the last thing you mentioned is super important. And I think finding a mentor or a group of people that are like-minded and hopefully farther than you are in your journey, right? So you can kind of learn from them and hopefully avoid some of the roadblocks and the potholes that they had to stumble through will help you on your journey a lot faster. I completely agree that finding yourself a group or a tribe of people is super important, especially as you're venturing into something that maybe you're not exposed to normally or anything like that. When I started my real estate journey, I had no idea what I was getting myself into, but you start to find people that are doing things that you want to do and you start to just ask them questions, and some people will be more forthcoming with information than others. And so you just start to gravitate towards people that are doing some cool stuff and you start to work with them. I think that's massively important. I kind of unpack your first deal a little bit. You mentioned you said you had a commercial deal in 2004, and you did an exchange, and I'm assuming that's a 1031 exchange, if I'm correct, which essentially allows you to kick your tax burden down the road by flipping that into another similar property. But you bought this other one in Houston. So you're living in California. How did you find a deal in Houston and then feel comfortable enough to invest in that deal?
You know, it's a great question. And that's the big hiccup that a lot of investors have. I wrote a book with my daughter a few years ago, and we're actually just starting out promoting it. It's called A Manual for the Ultimate Real Estate Investor. It's available on Amazon. It's got great reviews. It's not a long read. It's roughly 90 pages in big font. I wanted to make sure that everybody kind of sees how you're able to dissect real estate into different chapters, and then what will you need in order to be successful in every chapter. And that's what the book really covers. That's why I called it a manual. And I even wrote it with a glossary because, again, it's really for brokers that want to focus on being investors. It's really on professionals like accountants, like attorneys, like mortgage brokers that would like to get some passive income through commercial real estate, industrial real estate. And yes, they know the properties around them. If you live in LA, it's easy to look at properties in LA. You live in Austin, it's easier for you to look at San Antonio. It may be Houston. You're familiar with Texas.
Yep.
My wife's family is actually from Dallas. So I started traveling to Dallas back in 2000 after we got married. And myself, obviously being from Ukraine, then Israel, then other places in the United States, I wasn't afraid to venture and to look at other areas. I understood that obviously studying economics and undergraduate is just all different metropolitan areas that the economic factors are all different. So do you want to own real estate just within 30 minutes of driving, or are you open to potentially flying to see your real estate maybe once a year or maybe once every 5 years? Because the property in Houston, I'll be honest with you, have owned it since, again, January of 2005. I've been there to see the property only because I felt like seeing it no more than four times throughout this whole thing. Because I have a phenomenal management company. And again, you just don't need to. Go ahead, Justin.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting. Depending on the blog you listen or you read or the podcast you listen to, you'll get advice that invest in within a 90-minute radius of your house, right? Invest in your backyard. That's where you should start. And some investors only invest in their backyard. And then you've got the other people that are all about going where the opportunities are and partnering with people, whether it's real estate agents or brokers, or actually partnering on deals in markets that are attractive, right? Our first deal that my wife and I bought wasn't out of state, but it was on the opposite side of Pennsylvania. We lived in Philly and we bought a deal in Pittsburgh. So I wasn't going to see it. I frankly have seen the property, now that you bring it up, since we purchased it. I purchased it sight unseen. My real estate agent saw it, but then I think I've only seen it once, maybe twice. Yeah. And we bought it in 2019. That's kind of scary or kind of weird to think about, right? You've got this asset that I have a great management team, like it sounds like you have. And it's like, as long as the money is coming in and they're doing their work to keep the property working and all that, you don't need to be hands-on, right? You don't need to worry about it as much. So, so that's interesting. I haven't actually thought about how many times I've seen that property since you just mentioned that. That's funny.
But having a camera system is great, and requiring your management company to do certain things that normally other landlords might not require is also great.
Yeah.
And overlooking these reports that you receive from them, so they know that you're on top of it and they don't feel like it's a remote control type of a management deal. You want to be an active investor, even if you're in Hawaii and your properties are across the country. It doesn't matter where they are. You should be able to hop on a flight in case you cannot get a hold of whomever for an extended amount of time and take over.
Yeah.
Whatever's happening. That's the idea.
And what kind of deal was this one back in Houston? Was it a triple net? And if so, what was it?
It's actually located. You can also see it on our investment fund page. The website is moneymanagement.today, but there's a whole bunch of links. And this one is called Passive Income for All. That's what we called the investment fund page. So we have in our portfolio six properties, and you could see that property in Houston in the portfolio. It's a grocery anchored shopping center that's roughly 45,000 square feet. The grocery anchor is Foodorama, who's been in that area for many years. We bought it directly from the developer. I like to get deals that all of us want to get and we want to keep for a long time. And it also has a dialysis clinic as another subtenant, a whole bunch of services like a Subway, chicken. It's been pretty much operating at almost 100% occupancy for the entire time that I've owned it.
That's interesting. And so I've had a few people on recently, probably the last month or so, that have talked about triple net. But for anybody that's new listening, maybe explain high-levelly kind of the benefits of triple net as an owner.
It's huge. It's really, really huge. And, you know, that's the reason that we don't focus on purchasing multifamily properties. And that's the reason why we're not focused on purchasing properties towards Airbnb or short rental. Of course, if we receive a portfolio of multifamily or Airbnb properties at a 20-25% discount, we'll purchase it. But we're not going to keep it long term. The biggest reason is triple net leases allow the investor, the owner of the property, to pass through all of the expenses that are on the property. And that includes real estate taxes that go up in a lot of non-disclosure states like Texas. The rate for the most part is 2.8-3%. And most properties, when you buy them, they're being valued at maybe half of that. Yeah. And bankers are always saying, don't worry about it. The tenants can pay for it. But you can't just raise up their CAM like crazy. They will be unhappy. So you got to foresee these things ahead of time. Of course, you're going to be appealing it. But going back to what a triple net is, again, it allows the owners to really maximize their capital in an investment.
And so if you have a grocery store, right, yeah. I'm assuming the leases are 3 to 5+ years?
Normally, yeah. Okay. With some options. Typically, like with Foodorama, it's 5 years.
Okay.
Longer, yeah.
And so if they need to do any internal things to fix something, whether it's the refrigerator system breaks or I guess all those expenses are on the tenant, right?
Unless you have some sort of an exclusion in the lease. Again, when they are capped at how much they're going to pay for taxes, for insurance, for air conditioning, they can cap it. And then at that point, it's up to you as a landlord to say, I'll be okay with it or no, I don't want it. I want a complete, clean, triple net lease. And at that point, it just depends on how badly they want the space.
Yeah. And then what happens, and maybe this is like their insurance kicks in, but if there is like a roof leak or something like that, is that something that the tenant would have insurance that they would then have to figure out?
It really, we have to go back to what the lease says,
and
whose responsibility it is. And at that point, we have our own insurance, they have their own insurance, but it's really based on whatever the lease says. That's why in a commercial lease, I prefer to use the standardized form, which is available by the Department of Real Estate. Unfortunately, the majority of professionals don't. Majority of professionals create their own one-sided lease. And then it creates more money for the attorneys. And then you have to somehow negotiate this lease to be somehow normal for you. So again, that's why commercial real estate is so scary, but we can make it simpler as long as the viewers, the investors, whoever's really interested in the space, just educates themselves. That's it. You just have to educate yourself with this information. You don't have to learn on your own skin, like you said before. That's it.
Yeah. And then I guess the last thing I was curious about is the duration. So if that Foodorama, if they say, hey, we're not going to renew our lease, how hard is it to find another anchor tenant like that? I guess it depends on location, but how much of a vacancy rate do you kind of bake into your underwriting if that does happen where your core tenant, your anchor tenant leaves?
Yeah, you typically don't put more than 5-6% in your vacancy on your 100% occupied properties. You obviously overlook the budgets every year and you can foresee what's happening and you look at sales. Sales are a big tell on how well they're doing. Lucky for us, that store has been there since its creation. And it's been doing well. The economic stability of the very immediate region is strong. It's probably B- type of an area, tenant profile. Homes around there are maybe around 160,000, 170,000. Reasonable. So, of course, at the end of the day, for a strong provider of very basic necessities, which is a grocery store, for that to happen, it's typically something within the company, which we're not foreseeing, thank God. And if you do see these types of situations where you have Albertsons being bought out by Ralph's or other ones, that's when it takes potentially time to reoccupy the space. But if the traffic counts on the streets are strong enough, if the store before was doing decent, then you'll occupy it very fast.
Got it. Makes sense. So I'm curious, kind of like ramp up to where we are now, right? So we talked a little bit more detail about that one deal that was back in 2004. So yes. What are you kind of focused on now in the real estate space or just the general investing space?
I'm always focused in the real estate space as far as investing. That's my core investing focus. Of course, as there are opportunities, I look elsewhere. But for the most part, I've learned that in order for you to be able to achieve your goals, you have to really be focused with what it is that you have. And that's really what got me to learn about self-directed IRAs. And at a time where all my money was invested, I kept saying, well, what else can I do? How can I make my capital work better? And that's where I learned that I can take the money out of stocks and bonds, purchase the property with it, have the income come into the same account that the IRA owns, leave it, set it and forget it, you know, just like they say. And yep. Do much better than I would be doing in the market. I wrote a case study about it. It's on our homepage at moneymanagement.today. It's under, I think the title for it is What Happens with the Stock Market or something like it. It's got a graph, but it's a very interesting case study because 18 months later, I called my investment advisor and I said, hey, what would have happened if I didn't take out the positions that I did? Because it was about 18 of them. And how much would the value be? Because when I did it, it was May of 2020. COVID was just happening.
Yeah.
It was 23,000. And when I did the case study, the stock market was 35,000. And we still did much, much better with real estate. So whoever's interested, read that case study. And I can tell you that constantly, when I say constantly, I mean annually, for an investor to look at their capital buckets and what are they collateralized by? And how realistic is it for me to receive my distributions based on the budgets that are in line? And how realistic is the growth that either my general partner telling me or what I'm seeing myself? That's really what I'm focused on, what I've been focused on since I pretty much semi-retired in 2013, where I stopped brokering real estate. And I told my wife, I think we can pretty much live off of what we have. As long as we keep investing in the real estate, obviously we'll grow because it's real estate.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting. And you mentioned that kind of off camera about the retiring and figuring out that you can become an investor, right? As opposed to being an employee or an entrepreneur or whatever the case is, you can keep your money moving and hopefully growing and moving and growing to a point that you don't have to actively work to generate income. You can just live off of the passive distributions or income that you have from real estate. So I think a lot of people listening to this are probably in that same boat where they're like, that's the goal is right to get to that financial freedom, that ability to live off of your investments and hopefully do it sooner than 60, 70 years old and normal retirement age.
Right.
So I want to dig in a little bit to your money management fund and kind of understand how you help investors, right? So if somebody's listening to this and like, hey, I've never heard of triple net lease and I want to learn more or passively invest with you, do you help investors passively invest or how does that work?
So I did a little interview with Kevin Harrington from Shark Tank last year, and that's on our investment fund page also. So
that's cool.
Yeah, whoever's interested in some more of those videos, it's on it. We provide over 10% ROI to our investors. That's really the goal. Ever since day one that I've been investing, I always said, as long as I'm getting my 10%, I'm good. Because growth will come and I don't need the numbers that are higher because most of the deals are crappy when you do that.
So yeah, they're very risky too, right? In order to get those numbers, you got to take a little more risk.
Right. And I'm not a risk tolerant individual. I worked very hard for everything I had. So I wanted to make sure that whatever deals I was putting my money, at least I don't lose it. Maybe I'm not going to get the same return at value deals, but long term, I'm going to get to where I need to get to. And that's what all the individuals that are really seeking financial freedom should do. they have to kind of analyze, or they can contact me and let me know what it is that they're doing, where their money is invested, and how it is that our private equity fund can help them. So like I started saying, we do provide over 10% ROI from day one. We have quarterly distributions, and the money is secured by real estate and commercial bridge loans. At this point, the portfolio only has real estate. We haven't funded any commercial bridge loans through the fund, but we are looking to do them to make those fundings as the deals come available, as we have extra money being available by investors saying, hey, Ben, where can you place my money? Because you have to have an origination system. For purchasing properties, we have an origination system, which is us. We've been investing in the space, like I said, for 30 years. So we're getting constantly deals. We're just being very picky. When you ask me how is the market different now than 2005, rates-wise, it's funny because the original rate that we got on that deal was 5.5% back in January of 2005. And now that everything came up to 5.75%, 6% on the commercial, for the most part, that's what we're getting quoted from life insurance companies. We're able to obviously work the deals because we just have to buy the deal at a little bit of a higher cap, which is the return on the investment, in order to get that 10% ROI return. So the market, honestly, in the commercial space, industrial space, retail space, again, not office space, not multifamily space, not short-term rentals. In those other spaces, you're based off of needed services. When your tenants are needed services, local businesses that have been there, the customers need them, you are able to counterattack internet, e-commerce. You're able to counterattack other businesses that are not established. And that's the only types of properties that we look to, the way I like to say it, get married to. Because every time you buy a property, you have to do your really 10-year numbers, 20-year numbers. We don't look to sell. We only look to buy long-term. This is an evergreen fund. So that's the other nice thing, that the idea was, my friends kept telling me, how is it that you're riding your bike, rollerblading, and you're managing this real estate portfolio and buying deals and doing, I said, it's all about the people that you work with and the product that you're dealing with. And because we're dealing with mostly triple net properties, with pride of real estate locations, with other parties that want us to be able to purchase the deal at market value, that's what allows for this to continue.
No, I think that's awesome. And I think one thing I wanted to understand, and I think a highlight, is kind of the team, right? This is a team sport, commercial real estate. It's almost impossible to do it by yourself. I'm sure there are people out there that can do it by themselves, but it does take a village to find, underwrite, acquire, and manage these assets. So maybe talk a little bit about your team, and maybe these are employees or partners or service providers like brokers and property managers. I'm just kind of curious how you build out your team so that you can ride your bike, but still acquire multi-million dollar assets.
They're all service providers. They're all management companies that are typically pretty close to the subject property or to the properties that they're managing. In addition to that, we have our general partners. The fund is a limited liability partner. And the general partner, who's normally an accountant, an attorney, a real estate professional, or just a real estate investor, they put 10% on the deal. And they are able to receive the return. And they are really the boots on the ground that deals with the management company in order to provide the investors of the fund the same benefits that they are receiving, but without having to deal with the headache. So it's all about having enough people to split the pie with. A lot of people like to kind of hog the pie. You can't scale up when you do that, and you can't have proper attention if you don't have individuals that know exactly what's going on. And in order to talk to the person that knows exactly what's going on, you have to have boots on the ground. So we have boots on the ground. I mentioned to you before, our latest purchase in August of 22 is a property in West Michigan that Dan got us.
Yeah.
And, at the end of the day, West Michigan was a new market for us, but the management company that Dan recommended, Keystone Management, has been phenomenal. And even though the actual management company is 2 hours from the property, they were able to make it over the holidays and provide tenants gift baskets and do a proper tour. So it really boils down to, are you wanting to be the type of asset landlord that the tenants want to stay in your location, or are you making it so tough on your tenants that they're just looking for other options? And we always look for the better way of our tenants staying and obviously flourishing with our locations.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. And having the right property management team is ultra important. We talked about that a little earlier. So I think that's awesome. So we're recording this in mid-January of 24. So what is your kind of crystal ball on 24 as far as, are you still in acquisition mode? I'm just kind of curious kind of what you think 24 is going to shape up to be, because depending on who you talk to, it could be doom and gloom or it could be rosy. So I'm just kind of curious your thoughts.
Our formula is to be able to acquire whenever that organic deal that we want needs to be sold because of a partnership dissolution or a death in the family and they don't want to own it anymore. And we want to be the buyers for that property that we want.
Yeah.
At market value. So being able to get the loans at a reasonable rate as the market shifts, that's what allows you to really purchase properties all the time. Doesn't matter what market you're in. As far as transactions, last year, I'm sure you know, has been the lowest in residential and commercial as far as all industry-wide. And that's something that I believe there are platforms that can be used in order to make the industry a lot more transparent. Because currently there's a lot of inventory that's just not being shown to those buyers that are looking for it.
So yeah, it's definitely still a relationship business, right? Yes. You've got to be on the short list for brokers and agents to get those deals before they hit the mass email distribution, right? Because once they've hit that, most often they've already gone through a handful of eyes that haven't purchased it, right? So you're sort of bidding war. So
the big companies, for the most part, keep their inventory as pocket listings for 6 months to 12 months before they actually put it on platforms that are more open to the investor public. We created a course called Commercial Investment Debt Consultant, which is also on our site. And it's available on Udemy from $10 to $15. Normally it's $180. It all goes to a nonprofit. And it really allows the investors, accountants, attorneys, residential agents, anybody that really wants to feel like they can understand the commercial industrial space a little bit better, it allows them to get that knowledge in just a 50-minute video. That's all it is. It's a 50-minute video. And if you want to get certified, obviously, and do something with it, that's already something else. But we're working on that transparent platform because we're looking, just like you asked me, deals-wise, I believe we would have done more deals if the platforms were available. So coming for the next few years, I believe we will be acquiring a few deals because they come up as it is. And at that point, it's just a matter of you executing on them. We are looking in the large MSAs in the United States in growing areas, at which there's definitely plenty. The economy overall is doing well, even though we are anticipating, obviously, a bit of a slowdown. Anytime with election year, nothing really hits the shit until the 100 years. I'm sorry, the 100-day, you know.
Yeah.
So we're talking April of 2025. We're going to get the real news of what our economic situation is and all that. But overall, when you invest in commercial, industrial, retail, and you're looking at manufacturing as your tenants, you're looking at tenants that are really needed for the community, that's really the safest way to invest because these are businesses that need to be there in that real estate for a reason. And if you're able to acquire that real estate, you're a winner.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. I like that kind of necessity type acquisition kind of thesis. Right. That makes a lot of sense. So I want to kind of wrap up here with a three-pack of questions that I ask every guest on the podcast. So question one is, what's one piece of advice that got you started or helped you on your real estate investing journey?
I had a broker that told me that I'm going to make more money buying real estate than selling real estate.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, I mentioned it in the book.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. And this may answer the next question too, but what is your favorite real estate or business book that you're into right now? And you can say your own book if you want.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to say my own book because I've been really focused, like I said, with the course, with the commercial investment debt consultant course, and a lot of information that currently doesn't exist about commercial, industrial, and retail. There's really no certification out there that provides this type of information. And that's what I'm focusing on, how to make the commercial space more palatable to investors nationwide, not so scary, because it's really not that scary as long as you understand it.
Yeah. No, I think it makes a lot of sense. And what was the title of the book that you wrote with your daughter?
A Manual for the Ultimate Real Estate Investor.
Got it. Very cool. And that's on, you can get on Amazon and all that?
Yeah, you can get it on Amazon. We have the link on our homepage as well.
Awesome.
For any of you that are locally in the LA area, we're going to have a book signing at the Grove May 19th. So we welcome you. And then in Thousand Oaks as well. We don't have the date yet, but we'd love to see some fellow investors.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, this podcast will probably air before May. So definitely check that out if you're in the LA area. And then the last question is, you talked about this slightly, but we'll ask it anyway. If you hit your financial freedom number, meaning you live an amazing life just off of the investment passive income that you have, what would you do?
Well, you would do what you should be doing as it is, as everybody says, right, weekly now. If you truly enjoy rollerblading in the beach, you have to somehow implement it into your weekly schedule, right? Even today. You're asking me what I would do?
Yeah.
I would definitely be spending more time doing it as opposed to right now. I'm really keen on education, keen on spreading the message, keen on really allowing others that are looking for another way to be able to invest their capital, feel good about it, and understand what it is that is in that vehicle. I'm sure that my energy is going to run out at some point. But honestly, if it doesn't, and my goal, I'm 50 years old, my goal was to do this until 65, 70. If I continue to be passionate about it with amazing people around me, hey, why stop, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I hear that a lot when I ask that question to people that are passionate about what they're doing. It's like, I'm doing what I'm doing. I would just maybe travel more or do something else with some spare time. But it makes a lot of sense. Ben, this has been awesome to kind of learn about your journey. You mentioned it a little bit already, but I'll plug it again. If somebody wants to reach out to you, what's the best way to get you, learn more about what you're doing?
Moneymanagement.today is the website. You can find us also on Facebook, on LinkedIn. You can find myself as well on Instagram. We're very approachable, very direct, and we like to do business the old-fashioned way with all of the modern techniques and tools and platforms that are available to all of us. Why not use technology to our best? I remember when I signed my first deal back in 2006 using an iPhone, sitting from a Starbucks while my wife was visiting her grandma, and I was so proud of myself. I had to use like three apps to make it happen, but I was so proud of myself because I'm like, yeah, I'm being efficient.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I think the real estate market can still afford some technology integrations to make things a little bit more transparent, like to your point, and a little bit simpler. So Ben, man, really appreciate the time. This has been awesome. Absolutely. And yeah, we'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Thank you, Justin.
I hope you got value out of this episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast, your one-stop shop for education on how you can continue to work hard in your career and have different options to invest even harder. If you took anything away from this episode, please like and comment. I read every comment as it helps me serve you better. Make sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell. That way, you won't miss out on more valuable content. If you're watching this video, it means that you want to grow your passive real estate portfolio. The easiest way to do that is to join our investor club by heading to greatventurecapital.com/invest. The link is in the show notes. See you on the next episode.